order, and I'm going to... Oh, would you please shut your phones and your pagers and all your electronics off for me, please? And I'm going to open a work session, a public hearing, a work session on House Bill 2854.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2854 permits disciplinary action against a public safety officer only for just cause. You have in front of you a dash two amendment which replaces the bill. It modifies current statute that is relating to the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training's authority to deny, suspend, or revoke the certification or accreditation of a program. And what the amendment does is it gives the department the ability to deny the certification of any public safety officer instructor to apply for recertification if the certification was revoked based on a finding that the officer or instructor was discharged with from cause from employment as a public safety officer, but no sooner than 4 years after the date on which the order revoking the certification is final.
Thank you. I have Representative Crummell and a constituent, I believe. Representative, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, Gaston, and Bull Mountain. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us to bring this this to you today. House Bill 2854 is basically a rewrite of House Bill 3008. I want to give John Graves, my constituent, a chance to talk just a couple minutes about this. This came to me as a result of Mr. Graves, who had a problem, and current state law doesn't allow us to fix the problem. We've involved the Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training, and when Mr. Graves brought this to our attention during the interim, we spent some time working with the agency and found out that the only way to fix the problem that Mr. Graves had and potentially other folks have is through a statutory change. We have talked with DPSST. We've talked with Mr. DeLashment from the Police Officers Association. We've talked with Sarah, with the all of the other groups, I think, that are involved with this, and they are all on board with and fine with the amendments that we have provided. And so at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Graves.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is John Graves, and it is a pleasure to be in front of this committee today. Approximately 4 years ago, I was terminated as a corrections officer over in Warm Springs for procedural and policy violations, no criminal of any sort. And I accepted the termination and started looking for other employment in the law enforcement division, and received news that from DPSST that my certification was scheduled to be revoked. I informed them that I wanted to appeal the hearing to see if I could save my certification. Had the hearing, and the findings were that it was revoked. Since that time, well, after the revocation, I was informed I had to wait 3 to 4 years before I could reapply for reinstatement. So I went back to school, got my associate's degree in criminal justice, and I'm currently working in an armed security position right now, waiting for that time frame. I subsequently was hired as a reserve police officer, and a month into Reserve Academy, was informed that I was not certifiable. I then contacted DPSST, and they said that it is a lifetime ban, which was news to me because I was told at the beginning it was just a 3 to 4 year wait. So I'm not asking, you know, that every person who has been terminated for cause and had their certification revoked be reinstated. I'm just asking that it makes it possible for those who have had their certification revoked to be given the opportunity to reapply for it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions of these gentlemen? All right. I really appreciate you guys coming in and bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2854. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2440.
Yeah, that's
okay. Work session on House Bill 2440. 3.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2443 requires that the OLCC prepare and make available a small business impact statement before issuing a new off-premise sales license. During our first hearing on this bill on March 28th, Representative Lim had indicated that there will be a Dash 1 amendment, which is in front of you now. It replaces the bill and directs the commission to conduct a study which identifies the nature and the scope of the impact that results from increasing the number of off-premise sales licenses and outlines further measures to implement the study.
Great. We have Representative Lim here. He's right in front of us. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Schaffler, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Lim, state representative from Gresham District 50. And then, as already your staff summarized, there's a Dash 1 amendment and also the impact statement from the OLCC. And the Dash 1 amendment didn't come out the way I wanted. So with your approval, I don't want this Dash 1 amendment, because this Dash 1 amendment will cost about $1 million to the OLCC. So I would rather take the original House Bill 2443, and my intention of this bill, when there is a small mom and pop stores, maybe less than 5 employees and within 500 feet area, some stores might be coming in, and then to the across the street or next, they are competing each other. So to me, instead of a healthy competition, they are killing each other. So eventually, they are not going to survive together. So my suggestion is this, that the OLCC need to study impact statement of a saturation issue. How many mom and pop the package stores should be in that area? And then at least with that study, they might be able to reasonably that they control whether they should give the license package store or not. So out of the, because many people coming from out of country, especially minorities, they own the small mom and pop store, and then pretty soon in Iowa to one of the stores just next door across the street competing each other. This is not healthy. And so out of that concern, I have introduced this 2443. This bill suggests small business and new stores within 500 feet need to study anticipated economic impact of the store. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of Representative Lim? All right. Representative, I don't intend to work this today, but over the interim, if you want to work on this, I'd be more than willing to work with you to see what we can do to help these store owners.
During the interim, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
What does it mean, interim?
After session's over.
After session's over, okay.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Chair, if that's a wish, your wish will be done.
All right, sir.
So we can study more during the interim, and we can bring it better.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2443, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3301.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we heard House Bill 3301 on April 11th. The bill makes findings concerning the use of Oregon workers perform services contracted for by state agencies and also requires state contracting agencies to award state contracts for services in accordance with procedures that promote the investment of state funds in jobs and the economy of Oregon and the United States. And we do have permission to add a Ways and Means subsequent referral on the measure.
And this is a teamwork bill?
This is a teamwork bill, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, folks, I would entertain a motion to move this bill to Ways and Means without recommendation.
What are we on? 3301.
Representative Escobar.
Yeah, I move that we move 3301 to Ways and Means without any recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 3301 to Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Very good. Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mulvey.
Aye.
Excuse.
Aye.
I'm a nice guy. I'll vote aye.
not particularly enamored with this bill, but very good. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3301. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3302.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3302 creates the task force in the underground economy. We first heard this bill on April 25th. There is a dash one amendment which was discussed at the first hearing, which changes the appointment authority of one of the task force members from the Workers' Compensation Board to the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and we also received permission to add the Ways and Means subsequent referral.
Yes, and I understand that the powers that be are willing to fund the staffing for this task force. So I'll entertain a motion to move House Bill 3302 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger.
No, let it be moved, and I'll speak.
Representative Edwards.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee pass House Bill 3302 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3302 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I am conflicted about this bill because I think that the underground economy is a very much of an issue. But I'm not sure what the price tag of this is going to be, and we've got a lot of things we're sending down to Ways and Means with a, we like this, let's pay for it, and I'm a little concerned that we're just adding bureaucracy and not adding value-adding. I just thought I'd put that on the record for this bill, but I think that the underground economy is an issue and one that we should be looking at. I'm just not comfortable with fiscal on this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I agree with my colleague from Salem. And not only that, but we understand that the underground economy constitutes about a 10% loss on our revenue of our taxation, which means it would be about $1.5, $1.6 billion per year. So I think we have a pretty good handle on that, at least they seem to in revenue and fiscal. So I don't understand why we would want to initiate a bureaucracy to see it if we already know what it is.
Any further discussion? Kristen, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
Excused?
Aye.
Aye. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3302. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2712.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2712 creates an interim task force on land divisions. We last heard this bill on April 25th. At the April 25th hearing, you received a dash two amendment which outlines the membership of the task force and clarifies the goals of the task force.
And I believe this is Representative Smith's bill.
Yes.
So we want to move the dash two.
Yes, that's correct. And we do have Tom Gallagher that's available for you to answer any questions.
Well, before we go there, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the dash twos into this bill.
What are the dash twos?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2712.
Mm-hmm. Representative Holvey moves we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2712. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, I don't have the dash twos. I'm just reading them, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind.
That's quite all right. We have Representative Smith here with us now.
I'm having an ocular migraine.
During your spare time, Representative.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. We're waiting for a moment, but I think.
Yes, thank you. I remember at the time being concerned that there weren't private interests represented on this task force, and I'm assured that by this amendment they are, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Any further discussion on the amendments? On the amendment? Any further discussion on the amendment? Well, seeing none, is there any objection? All right, so moved. Who moved it in the first place?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edwards, you want to finish that motion?
I move it, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Oh, Representative Holby, you want to finish that?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2712 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Does it go to Ways and Means?
We do have permission if the committee so chooses.
I think
to.
We should, since there's money in it, send it to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I changed my motion.
Unless Representative Smith, you want this to just go straight to the floor? Okay, then that's what we're going to do then. Representative Holby.
I don't think she had a chance to.
Mr. Chair, is there a fiscal impact statement on this bill? Because it says
May have fiscal impact.
May have fiscal impact.
Yeah.
So I don't have a statement.
You can say, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, we do not have an actual.
I will do whatever the committee's wishes are.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to change my motion.
Well, just a second, Representative.
Again, it has a fiscal impact. I'd like to see that it gets.
I want everyone happy. I want as many yeses as possible.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend my motion and restate my motion. I'd like to send House Bill 2712 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Holby moves House Bill 2712. To the floor, as amended, to the floor of DuPas recommendation, subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Kristen, would you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Very good. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2712, and we're ready to go on. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3451.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3451, we first heard this measure last Thursday, April 26. It modifies the manner in which retirement credit is calculated under the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, or otherwise known as OPSR. You have in front of you a -3 amendment, which replaces the original bill language. It establishes that an OPSR pension program member accrues 1 year of retirement for each full year of service and 1/12 of a year of credit for each full month in each major fraction of a month, and does not receive credit for any hour service which benefits are not funded by either employer contributions or earnings on the fund. It also establishes an OPSRP member that is a school employee accrues 6 months of retirement credit if the member is employed for the entire portion of a school year that falls between January 1st and June 30th, and 6 months of retirement credit if they work the entire portion of a school year that falls between July 1st and December 31st.
And we're working off the -3.
That's correct.
And you should have them before you. And who should I call up? Mr. Green and Mr. Delaney?
And
Beth Ann Darby. Would you, Mr. Green, Ms. Darby, and Mr. Delaney, would you all come on up here and explain your -3s and tell us why it's such a great idea again? Okay, very good. Thank you.
Is this House Bill 3451?
Yes. Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. There is just a minor change to the bill, because the bill had originally had a new methodology encapsulated in it, 3451, dealing with how to track major fractions of a month. It was different from our existing methodology, and that's really been the goal of 3451, is to get us back to the existing methodology for Tier 1, Tier 2, so we just have one way of determining service credit for all members rather than having to have two different standards. So this -3 amendment moves away from 50 hours per month, moves away from 2,000 hours per year, which have kind of been scattered throughout the bill, and moves back to the standard that's been in place for Tier 1, Tier 2, which is that you work a full year, 600 hours, get your full year service credit, and if you work partial year, then those months of the partial year, you have to work the major fraction of that month, which traditionally for us is working through the 16th of the month. That gives you the major fraction of the month.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is that issue of fairness that I talked to the committee about last week, where you've got workers who think they're working a full year, and they're not getting that full year worth of service credit in the Tier 3 plan at OPSRP, and it's one that our school districts have brought forward as we want to make sure people are treated fairly. And the -3 amendment, I believe, Beth Ann Darby's had her attorney take a look at it, and we all agree it clarifies the issue and takes care of the problem.
Beth Ann, anything?
Nothing to add, except for we sure hope you'll support this.
Thank you. And Teresa, did you have some explanation?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Right, there's a current subsequent referral to Ways and Means in looking into seeing if it was removed. My understanding from the fiscal analyst is that the agency has red flagged the bill. I'm not sure what that means, but it's an indication that Ways and Means should look at the bill. So I don't want to put you on the spot, Steve.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do not know what red flag means. I've not heard that from our staff.
Neither do I.
That means there's a big load sticking out the back end. Any questions of this panel?
No idea.
All right, I'll entertain a motion to move the amendment, -3s.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 3451.
Representative Holvey moves -3s be adopted into House Bill 3451. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? All right, seeing none, so moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3451 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Hobie moves House Bill 3451 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Representative Berger.
Yeah, this should have a minimal fiscal impact now, but it may, if we don't do it, I think it might have a disastrous consequences in the future. Mr. Chair, I think this is a very good bill.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Kristen, please.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
Representative
Smith.
Aye.
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 Aye. All right, very good. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3451, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2435.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2435, we first heard this bill on February 22nd. The original bill establishes four types of vehicle appraiser certificates. At the hearing, the committee instructed the chief proponent of the bill to work with stakeholders in developing amendments, which are in front of you. The Dash 1 amendment replaces the bill. It creates new provisions, which establishes that a person committing the offense of acting as an appraiser without a certificate as a Class A violation, and it also clarifies statute relating to an appraiser certificate to add the terms vehicle appraiser certificate and master vehicle appraiser certificate, and allows the Department of Transportation to establish rules to adopt educational requirements for the issuance or renewal of vehicle appraiser and master vehicle appraiser certificates.
Thank you. And we have Monty King here, if he would come up and briefly describe the amendment for us. It would be greatly appreciated.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Monty King. I'm president of Oregon Vehicle Dealer Association, auto appraisers of Oregon. We went back, worked with all the people in the industry, took it down to two appraiser licenses. I also put education requirements that have mandated, we put them in the rules so that there can be education requirements, but it's not necessarily about how many. It's a good bill for local government. Change experience for training. We changed the license to 3 years instead of two and just upped it a little bit. The master appraisers actually said we want to pay more and make sure there's money in there to pay for the master certificate level.
I know a lot of people were involved in this and they haven't come up and said that their hair's on fire, there's any problems. And if they were, they'd be here nodding their heads, screaming and hollering at me. So, are there any questions of Mr. King? All right. Thank you, Mike. I'll entertain a motion. Representative Escobar.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to 2435 as an appendix.
Representative Escobar moves that we adopt Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2435 as our discretion. Is there any objection? So moved. Representative?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move 2435 as amendment to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2435 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Would anyone like to carry this bill? Representative Esquivel, thank you. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2435, and I'm going to jump down and open a work session on House Bill 2623.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2623 eliminates break-in service provisions of the Public Employees Retirement System, as established and outlined in ORS 238025. We first heard this bill on March the 5th. And there are no amendments in front of you. In your mail packet is a fiscal statement on the bill, which I can review, Mr. Chair, if you'd like.
Actually, what I'd like to do is ask Mary Botkin and Steve Delaney or anybody else in public employees that want to come up and talk about this. Mary can handle it. Just describe to us again what we're doing here briefly. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And I guess for the purposes of this hearing, also for the PERS Coalition, this bill is actually a very simple little bill. It eliminates the, quote, break-in-service provisions of the PERS reforms that were passed in 2003. And just as a way of brief background, The break in service is if a public employee leaves PERS covered employment for 6 months or longer, with the exception of some provision, with some exceptions, and then comes back to PERS covered employment, they are placed from the tier that they were in when they left to whatever tier is appropriate when they come back. The problem with it is that what you have is you have a lot of mobility with public employees. They move from location to location. They move to increase their educational credentials. They move to get other experience, and often come back to employment. And when they retire, what it's created for PERS is an administrative nightmare, because if you left employment, say you were a teacher and you left and traveled from one school district to another school district, and there were 6 months in between, the PERS must track your employment to make sure that there was not a six-month break in service as you move from school district to school district. The problem with this is it has created a huge cost to PERS, about $250,000 a year, and it doesn't offer any real savings. And in fact, we just got the fiscal, and I handed you the fiscal that PERS did. If you look at the second page of the fiscal that PERS did, I will read this to you, not because I don't think you can read, but because I want to have it on the record.
You don't want to take anything for granted, do you?
I don't want it. I assume all of you can read. The actuarial impact. The study done by PERS actuaries concluded the following. Actuarially neutral or cost savings in near term. Elimination of the break in service will result in an increase in pension costs totaling 0.01% of employer payroll, or $600,000 per year in employer contributions. However, this cost may be offset or more than offset due to the elimination of members' current ability to receive a money match benefit, which increases based upon the assumed rate plus accrue a benefit under OPSERP. This bill would eliminate the ability for someone in this situation to additionally accrue an OPSERP benefit, thus resulting in system savings. Longer term, as the system becomes less dominated by the money match, the offsetting savings will decrease. This actually saves us money. Steve and I came in here today prepared to say this bill saves us $250,000 a year in administrative costs. It may result in a 0.01 increase in some employer rates, or it may lower some employer rates. And we don't exactly know where this came from, who they talked to, or how they came up with it, but they didn't take into consideration the savings. All they took into consideration was the first part of the sentence.
Steve, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. The one clarification I'd like to make to the fiscal you have in front of you is it does make a comment that's general fund, and I do want to make clear that we are not general fund. We are another fund agency. And I'll, again, just to remind the committee, as far as PERS the board has not taken an official position on this bill, but they did originally start the concept. We moved it forward because we're looking for ways to simplify the plan wherever possible. At the end of this past year, as the board looked at bills to introduce, they determined this was a benefit issue, and the board leaves to the legislature to determine benefit issues, and so they determined not to introduce the bill. I will say that generally, from my board chair, the direction is that if the bill is being looked at as a way to avoid OPSERP, as if OPSERP were a bad plan, the board would not look favorably upon that. But when the bill is viewed from an aspect of saving administration and making the plan simpler for our members to understand, the board is in support of that direction.
And can I just add, Mr. Chair, currently the PERS has made some computer changes, so they're able to do some of this calculation within the computer system. But it is an administrative nightmare to try and track people down, find their employment. You know, I don't know that I could find employment records for 10 years ago or 20 years ago if I had to produce them. And that is essentially what we're asking PERS to do, is to go back in some cases 20, 25, 30 years to reconstruct an employment history that shows either a break in service or no break in service. And this is just a nightmare for these folks, and it's costing a small fortune in administrative time to figure this out.
Just so I got this right, now currently there's administrative costs to administer break in service. We do this and get rid of it. Eventually, as Tier 1 and Tier 2 disappear, there will be no cost in administering break in service among Tier 3. That's correct. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct, because if you eliminate break in service, there is no tax.
I just needed a yes or a no. And then I don't know where this $1.2 million, they don't explain it at all. Can you shed some light on that?
Mr. Chair, actually it does come from the numbers that Mary read to you. If you, again, look at the PERS fiscal that was provided to Legislative Fiscal, down under actuarial impact, as Mary pointed out, they've quoted for you what the possible cost is, where in the third line it says, cost totaling 0.01% of employer payroll, $600,000 per year. So for a biennium, that's $1.2 million. What they haven't done is offset the savings, because what the actuaries have indicated is the bill could actually, instead of savings employer money, could actually cost employers up to 4 basis points. When you have money match members, take myself as an example. If I were to quit today versus continue to work for several years, my benefit's going to be about the same, because money matchers, you've got your benefit and it's not growing, because it's not, because your account has just 8%.
This is why we need to simplify the system.
But if I had a break in service, were gone 6 months and were to come back, not only would I have that money match benefit waiting for me when I retire, but I would now have on top of it an officer pension benefit. And that's where you have the possible exposure to employers of up to 4 basis points in cost.
Okay. Thanks for that explanation.
Don't ever ask a question unless you know the answer. Any more questions of these nice people here? I think this makes sense. I'll entertain a motion. We have a guest.
No.
Is there a subsequent referral on this?
Yes.
Yes, there currently is.
To Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, are there any amendments?
No.
I would move House Bill 2623 to the Committee on Ways and Means. To the floor, and then the Committee on Ways and Means.
Two Ways and Means
with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2623, Two Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative.
Do I need to Sam a potential conflict of interest?
You can declare it here if you'd like.
Actually, Mr. Chair, PERS members, because as all of you are members in one way, shape, or form,
No, I am not.
But that's okay.
Let the record show I am not a member.
It's not necessary to declare a conflict of interest as being
then
a PERS member.
No, just kidding.
Well, we want fluoride in our water. So any further discussion on this bill? All right, Kristen, would you please call?
Aye.
I have to think of, no.
Yes.
Yes. Aye. I'm going to close the work session.
Just kidding.
On House Bill 2623, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2548.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard House Bill 2548 on April 25th. At the hearing, we considered the -2 amendment, which replaced the bill and allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules which establish a reciprocating conveyor mechanic license and restricted reciprocating conveyor mechanic license, directs the department to adopt rules and establishes guidelines to do such, and also directs the department to adopt fees that do not exceed $100 per year for the issuance or renewal of a license, and reciprocating mechanic license, and $50 for the issuance or renewal of a restricted conveyor mechanic license. Yes.
But we're moving the -2 amendments, and I understand all the parties involved in this are happy with one another. Does anybody have any questions on this? I'll entertain a motion to move the -2s. If there's no further discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative.
I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2548.
Representative Rosenbaum moves dash two amendments to House Bill 2548. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? So moved. Representative.
I move House Bill 2548 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2548 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please.
Representative Edwards.
Excused.
Representative
Berger. Aye.
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 Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill? I think this is Representative.
Almost, that's correct. Yes.
Kerry's not here. We'll assume he's going to carry it. If not, then the chair will. So I'm going to closing the work session on House Bill 2548, open work session on House Bill 2677.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2677 allows the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to distribute a wine self-distribution permit to United States manufacturer of wine or cider. We first heard this bill on February 19th. You have in front of you a dash six amendment, which replaces the bill language. It clarifies who can obtain a self-distribution permit, what the permit holder can do with the permit, who can receive shipments from the permit holder, and reporting requirements.
We've heard this, and we've beat this to death, but I'm going to call Donna Vandal, Gary Conklin, and Paul Romaine to come up and briefly explain what they have to say about this bill. Please, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling representing the Oregon Wine Growers. Thank you for hearing the bill today. Just briefly to make sure that you have this in context, there's a U.S. Supreme Court decision that has dealt with what in-state and out-of-state wineries can do. You previously have dealt with the bill, House Bill 2171, that deals with the direct shipment to consumers. This bill deals with wineries selling to retailers, such as restaurants or grocery stores or the commission itself. In Oregon, Oregon wineries have the privilege of what we call self-distribution, the ability to sell directly to retailers. What this bill sought to do was a proposal brought forward by Mr. Romaine and the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors and the Oregon Wine Growers that creates a wine self-distribution permit. At the hearing, you heard a number of people raise questions. A work group was formed. Mr. Chair, you recall you presided over that work group. It produced a consensus, which is the dash six amendments. These are relatively carefully developed words that have meaning for what is in the words, and there are some words that aren't here either, and they're important by their omission. In essence, what we're doing is providing the same privileges subject to the same requirements for an out-of-state winery to self-distribute wine in Oregon as an in-state winery. There were three principal issues which this amendment addresses. They deal with the use of common carriers. This bill permits a winery, both an Oregon winery or an out-of-state winery, to use a common carrier subject to that carrier having a delivery plan approved by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, very similar to the process, by the way, for direct shipment to consumers. A second question was, who pays the tax? This amendment makes it very clear the winery is responsible for paying the tax, as it would be in Oregon. It's also an out-of-state winery, as an Oregon winery would be, is subject to a surety bond to make sure that the privilege tax is paid. The third question was retailer reporting some accountability. This bill provides that retailers that accept wine from out-of-state wineries must seek an endorsement by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. They also are required to submit reports. And in the case of, for example, a restaurant or some other retailer that only accepts from an out-of-state winery two cases or less, it will not be subject to reporting for that relatively small amount of shipping. An out-of-state winery will have a fairly easy ability to comply with these things. Reasonable steps would involve, for example, making sure that the retailer they would be shipping to has an endorsement, or the OLCC has indicated it will maintain a list of those retailers that have been endorsed. That it will check to make sure that the common carrier has an OLCC delivered, an OLCC approved delivery plan, and that the address, the name and the address are correct. Those would be the kind of reasonable steps an out-of-state winery would take. We would recommend the adoption of the Dash 6 amendments.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Vandal. I'm the Technical Services Coordinator with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. As Mr. Kompling explained, we've worked carefully and closely with representatives of the wine growers to come up with these amendments that address the concerns that were raised by the OLCC at the initial hearing. These amendments address the technical concerns that we have. Mr. Kompling summarized the key provisions, and we don't object to the bill if these amendments are adopted.
Thank you. Mr. Romaine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Romaine. I'm the attorney for the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We are fine with the bill as the with the proposed amendments. The key points here are really that the any out-of-state winery that's delivering has to play by the same rules. In other words, there's no quantity discounts. You can't have a big store, in effect, bringing the product to a central warehouse and then distributing them on their particular outlets. The delivery has to be made to the licensed premises, each licensed premise separately. Taxes have to be paid, and there is accountability. We think the OLCC and the wine growers and everybody did an excellent job on this, and we'd commend it to you.
Any questions of this nice panel?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. Can you tell me, is there anyone to your knowledge that opposes this bill now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, no. I believe all parties participated in the work group, and to the best of my knowledge, and I've talked with all of them and I'm aware of, that they're all supportive of the Dash 6 Amendment.
Thank you.
Hallelujah. Any further questions? I'll entertain a motion to move the Dash.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Please, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John DiLorenzo, I'm an attorney for the Northwest Grocery Association, and I just wanted to make one point, and that is I concur with Mr. Kompling's rendition of what is in the bill, what it does and does not do. To the extent that Mr. Romaine has talked about the status quo, I want you to know that there is a disagreement on whether or not central warehousing is permitted or not. This bill will have absolutely no impact on whatever the state of the law happens to be on that point, and should not be taken as history either way on that point. The amendments are very clear, and they do what they purport to do. And that's all I want.
Well,
to say.
You know what, guys? I don't want to get in a wet and match here. So I want to move this bill out of here, and you guys can go fight about it in the Senate if you want to. But I'm not going to get in a fight and match here.
Right.
If you absolutely insist, Mr. Romaine, please come forward.
Thank you.
Keep it brief, if I beg you.
I'm just going to read one portion of the bill.
Okay.
If you would look at page 2, paragraph, section 2, paragraph 5, states that a retail licensee may receive wine or cider from the holder of a wine self-distribution permit only if the licensee has received prior authorization from the commission. Prior authorization to this subsection must be made by an endorsement to the license for the premises where the wine or cider will be received. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that clarification. Any questions of these fine gentlemen? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to move the Dash 6 into the bill. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we amend 2677 with the Dash 6 amendment.
Representative Esquivel moves the Dash 6 amendments into House Bill 2677. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So moved. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we send 2677 as amendment to the House for the due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquel moves House Bill 2677 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Berger. Aye.
Aye.
Excuse?
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this fine bill to the floor?
It's your bill.
Well, okay. I guess the committee volunteers me. All right, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2677, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3357.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3357 deals with injured state employees. At the first hearing on April 23rd, we discussed the Dash 1 amendment, which replaces the bill. It clarifies in current statute relating to the reemployment rights of injured state workers that agencies must, by rule, adopt a process to identify entry-level and light-duty assignments, and also establishes the Task Force on Injured Workers. And this new amendment has been approved by the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and we do have permission to add a Ways and Means subsequent referral, as with the other task force bills we've heard today.
What is the dash?
Dash one.
I'll entertain. Can I have it, please?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
The dash one amendments to House Bill 3357.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3357. Is there discussion? I have a question, Teresa. MWAC saw the amendment?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
That was my question. Okay. All right, very good. Is there any objection or any further discussion or objection? All right, so move, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3357 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be added.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 3357 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? All right. Kristen, please.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
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 Excuse?
Aye.
Aye. All right. I'm going to close, Representative.
You can take this to the floor.
Let's go into Ways and Means.
Okay.
Go into Ways and Means first?
Yeah. I'm going to close work session on House Bill 3357. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3422. 3432, forgive me.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. Committee members, House Bill 3432 reduces the membership of the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training from 24 to 17 members and also changes the membership of the Corrections Policy Committee and the Fire Policy Committee within the Board's jurisdiction.
And members, I believe we're just sending this bill to rules for further work. Is there any discussion on that idea? I'll entertain a motion to do so. Elections. What is the committee again? Elections. Ethics
and rules.
And rules. Representative Berger.
I move House Bill 3432 without recommendation to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 3432 without recommendation to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. Is there discussion? All right. Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Excuse me.
Aye.
Aye. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3432, and I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2021.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first last heard House Bill 2021 on April 20th. We discussed a Dash 3 amendment the last hearing, which replaces the bill. The primary aspect of the amendment is that it clarifies statute relating to the applicability of state and federal wage rates in public contracting to state that if the state prevailing wage rate is higher than the federal prevailing wage rate, the project's contractor and every subcontractor shall pay at least the state prevailing wage as determined in current statute. Yes.
And I would like Jessica Adamson, please, to come up here and walk through the Dash 3s with us, please.
Dash
3?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have these.
We don't have any Dash 3s.
I have a Dash 3.
Do you? I don't have a
Dash 3. We have extra copies. So,
well, for once, I've got one.
Well, Jessica, as they're being passed out, if you want to walk through this with us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adamson with Associated General Contractors. The Dash 3 amendment does replace the bill in whole. A large part of the number of pages here, the nine-page amendment, goes through the prevailing wage statutes and updates the reference to the Davis-Bacon Act. It changed a few years ago, and so we're doing some cleanup. The bill also clarifies that what happened last session when we passed Senate Bill 477, we removed an exemption for projects subject to Davis-Bacon, federal Davis-Bacon, in order to do a policy that when you have both federal money and state or local money and you pay the higher of the two rates. By removing that exemption, we inadvertently removed the case law and the federal interpretation around those projects, in addition to making the politician make them pay the higher of the two. That has broader implications on prevailing wage jobs related to what's the site of work, what's the material supplier. It's all very exciting information that I can guarantee will put anyone to sleep, but it is a really big deal for those of us that spend time in this. And so what this does is that corrects that problem. It also clarifies that you can reference the fact that you've got to pay the higher of the two and points contractors to where the correct rates are online, so you don't have to publish what ends up being about a 300-page book with every set of specifications, very costly to the agency and to the contractor. It also cleans up some of the language in 2021 related to the liability of the public agency. This was to solve some problems that they raised and that the contracting that we found with Legislative Council and with the Bureau. And that's the totality of the amendments.
Yes, I have one question. Now, we made it so that last session, I think it was, if there's federal and state, you pay the higher of the two. Correct. That's still going to be the case. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Any questions of Ms. Adamson? Representative Berger.
Yeah. That last point you made, the public agency liability piece that's cleaned up, have any public agencies had a look at these amendments and agree with you? Or is that you talking?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I can't speak for where the public agencies are. I do know that we did fix in here the concern that was raised several months ago, which was they don't want to be solely liable for the whole amount of the wage should they attach the wrong book. Just the difference between, say, that the state rate was $20 and the federal rate was $30. If the state, if they didn't attach the right book and the contractor paid $20 when they should have paid $30, the contracting agency is not liable for the whole 30. They're just liable for the difference, so that only that $10. And that's the part that we cleaned up. That's the part that was negotiated during the 2005 session. The original bill didn't word that correctly. These amendments do.
Thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it.
Any further questions? All right, I'll entertain a motion to move the dash threes into the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2021.
Representative Berger moves dash three amendments into House Bill 2021. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2021 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2021 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, Kristen, please.
Aye.
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 Excuse?
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill on the House floor?
Okay.
Very good, Representative Esco. Thank you very much. We close the work session on House Bill 2021. Anything for? And I just want to thank this committee for working so diligently. I think this committee's done an excellent job on our House bills, and today's the last day. I just wanted to thank you for all your patience. And
now we have to work the Senate.
And I want to thank all the chairs for helping me figure out how to do this job. If there's no further discussion.
Mr. Chair, I have a discussion.
Representative Berger.
Thank you for your thank you. This committee has gone through an awful lot of bills, and we've worked very hard, and you've worked very hard. And I appreciate that sometimes they weren't easy.
That's why they pay us the big bucks, right?
That's right. So thank you. Thank you.
We got a raise?
With that, we're adjourned.